What is this, amateur hour?
Hello, everybody. This is Again With This Melrose Place. Today's episode is Season 4, Episode 3, Blind Ambition. And now, here are your hosts, Tara Ariano and Sarah D. Bunting.
Hello, Sarah.
Hello, Tara and Dave.
Hello, listeners. Welcome to the 100th episode of Melrose Place, which is what we are discussing today.
Wow. Oh, doctor.
Oh, God.
Yeah. just mark this very special occasion. You know, occasionally I like to go on eBay and just see what 90210 and Melrose Place memorabilia is for sale. Oftentimes it's things I've seen before, but one time it was something I'd never seen before and still have not seen since, and I bought it for Sarah in anticipation of this very special day. So, Sarah, please open the package I sent you marked Do Not Open Until Season 4, Episode 3 taping.
I am doing so right now. Usually I try to get an exemption for stuff like this and open stuff early. My legal spouse hates this, so I've opened the sleeve.
Uh-huh.
It is addressed to a morning show personage at KNCI First Class. There is an Alice Paul stamp on it.
Yeah.
Oh, boy. And on the back, celebrating 100 episodes, MP Melrose Place, July 8th, 1992 to September 20th, 1995. It is a flat sleeveless. Oh.
I forgot it came in its own little envelope.
Appear to be cards inside. Let's see. Oh. All right. So then there's an accordion style celebrating 100 episodes. Oh, so many pictures on the back.
Yeah, you should take a few shots of the best ones and put them in the visual aids because they're pretty
absolutely
special.
Friendship, romance. Oh my God. These pictures of Allison and Billy.
Mm-hmm.
Rivalry with the Andrew sisters fighting and mm-hmm. another hideous wedding dress. Obsession, passion, deceit, treachery. And it's just the beginning. And then here's a picture of Antonio Sabato Jr. Looming over Heather Locklear. So I don't know what that refers to.
Mm.
Do you?
No. I do. I watched ahead.
Thank you, Tara.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. I hope you will find a place for it in your home when it doesn't take too much room.
I certainly shall. I currently, behind me on Zoom, Zoom callers can see something from the Jenny and Tori show.
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm.
That a kind listener sent to us as part of a package, but I may have to post this over their faces. It depends on how they behave themselves on their podcast.
Mm.
Speaking of things that we talk about on the Patreon podcast, again with this episode 55 drops July 9th, we will be watching Gabrielle Carteris's CBS School Break special, What If I'm Gay?
Mm-hmm.
Is Gabrielle Carteris the gay one? Listen and find out. This is available to listeners at any contribution level. We have approximately a gazillion episodes of extras on Melrose and 90210. We hope that you will join us. We have a lot of fun.
We do. Patreon.com/againwiththis. And we also want to note, thank you, Slate. This came out, the article was published before the last episode that you guys heard. But because of the way we tape them, we haven't mentioned it until now. On June 18th. Rebecca Onion was over at Slate with an article titled, B-List Stars Love Recapping Their Old Shows, But Are Any of Their Podcasts Good? She had a lot of lovely things to say about Again With Them, which is our recap podcast of their recap podcast, which she gave an F+2, spoiler. So if you want to hear us talk about that, you need to go to patreon.com/againwiththis, join at the $5 level or up, and you will get a digest of the 90210 MG podcast from us once every month. It's a time. It's a time.
Didn't we have a time?
Speaking of time, it is time to get into season 4, episode 3, the 100th episode, Blind Ambition. Starting with our D plot, Kimberly has a hard time being a witness in her own defense. I'm just going to say, this episode and the next one, like, they need, I know that the stuff they do with Kimberly after this is wild, but they definitely needed to shake it up because this is just getting so samey. It's like every scene with her is the same thing since the premiere.
Agree.
So let's get through it. Peter checks in on Kimberly, who's sick of the ward, but also seems resigned to it. To sell the insanity plea in court, she's going to have to convince a new shrink that she is totally barmy. I am, of course, paraphrasing. Peter suggests that she could pretend she hears voices and stuff. And Kimberly's like, well, about that, because she's started remembering some things about the days leading up to the bombing, including clip two.
There was a man. He controlled me. He told me what to do. He was inside my head.
We all have what we perceive as other people inside of us. It's normal.
No, you see, he was real. He was very real. And he could come back.
That little was him kissing her hands. So, okay.
Yeah. Also, that's not how that works. Guy who went to med school, but okay.
Yeah. And as we've already said many times, like, Kimberly was already plotting violent revenge before Schmob came into the picture. So, like, well, what she's saying is true. It's not the whole story.
No.
So Sydney has settled into her job as a receptionist, as we would expect, using her nail buffer to roll calls, which I love. Can see again for this in the visual aids. Peter comes out to hiss at her that she shouldn't be answering Mancini Burns. It's Burns Mancini, even though Mancini Burns obviously sounds better, has better flow.
Better flow. Agree.
He demands his messages, of which there are many, including from Kimberly's new shrink, wanting their billing address, and Sydney wonders, does Michael know Peter's spending the practice's money on Kimberly? Peter looks worried for like a second that Sydney's going to dime him out to Michael, but quickly recovers to say it's none of Michael's business. And if Sydney wants to continue getting any of the practice's money, she will keep her mouth shut, and she chews her gum real hard and squints at him, and that's where they leave it. So later, Peter's with the shrink he hired, stating that Kimberly has schizophrenia and urging this new broad to have Kimberly sent to a particular hospital, while Kimberly lies in bed staring at the ceiling and moving her lips in an eerie way. And the psychiatrist asks Kimberly to speak to her, but Kimberly shushes her, saying she can't. And apparently that's all this woman needs to see. And in the hall, she says it's clear Kimberly intended to cause bodily harm in a well-planned bombing. True. Mm-hmm. And other than the roof incident in the last episode where she threatened to jump, nothing indicates that Kimberly is criminally insane. All she attributes to Kimberly is bad acting. Ma'am, how dare you?
Yeah, seriously.
But
that is Marcia Cross.
Yes.
Repent.
Mm-hmm. Put some respect on LaCrosse's name. Anyway, she's already walking away when Peter tries a little bad acting of his own. Clip three.
I'm sorry, doctor. But this is a serious misdiagnosis on your part.
You'll get my bill in the mail.
Yeah, buddy, for the 15th time, you are a surgeon. This is not your specialty. Stop diagnosing Kimberly yourself. You are not objective, and this is not your lane.
Yeah, I just, I feel like they had other things that they were trying to do, but in order to keep Kimberly, like, on screen and in the mix somehow, they just kept, like, treading water with this for ages. Like, this is not how any of this works, which, like, if there were some forward motion, I would be fine with it, but there isn't, so I'm not.
Yeah. I mean, it's boring. Like, she's literally having hallucinations of this person. We're still like, and this is the D plot. Anyway, it's almost done.
Yeah.
Some number of days later, it's time for a hearing in her case. Peter storms over to yell at Michael and Sydney in the gallery about why they're there. And then Kimberly turns around and sees the three of them talking. And when she looks into the silver water pitcher before her, Schmob is back. Clip four.
stupid to think that I was gone. Kimberly.
Oh, God, no.
Because I am never leaving you.
Kimberly Shaw, you are charged with murder in the first degree. What is your plea?
We plead not guilty by reason of insanity.
I understand that because of the defendant's promise to make restitution, the people have agreed to drop the stalking charges. Now, may I review the psychiatric evaluation?
Excuse me, Your Honor? This woman is not insane.
This is none of your business.
She is fully aware of what she did and should be held responsible for her actions.
Your Honor,
is not
someone
done.
Died.
They're still alive. She's pretending to be crazy so she can... Too much must do, Kimberly.
It was a premeditated order. Plot to murder and maim, Judge.
I said order.
Kill your betrayers.
Order, please.
Do it!
It's a really weird episode of Jane the Virgin.
He does kind of sound like that narrator.
Yeah.
You need to go to the visual aids to see the flying squirrel Kimberly puts from her seat at her table before the judge.
Well, I mean, this is the thing. Like, she is committed. Cross is committed to it. And this is like a lot of fight call blocking and, you know, stunt coordination to be wasting on this nothing burger, which in real life, like, she would be held all to the gills so that she could answer for her actions, and then she would be locked up, like, end of story. That sucks, but, like, you're a soap opera. Lather it up and let's go.
Yep. So as Kimberly's dragged off screaming, "I have to kill them, he told me to," Michael tries to gloat to Peter that his favorite nutcase, his words not mine, will be spending her golden years behind bars, but Peter smugly replies that Michael and Sydney basically made it impossible for the judge not to agree that Kimberly is criminally insane. So thanks, which, okay, I get it.
Sure.
Cut to a bed in a mental institution where Kimberly is still being tormented by Schmob's voice. "She's trapped," says Schmob, "because of him," which is why it's bad timing when him, Schmob means Peter, shows up to promise he will get Kimberly to the right hospital as soon as possible. And he doesn't register that she's actually upset as he crows about the way she came at Michael because he thinks it was just a performance. But she hides her face, whimpering that she doesn't want to see Peter. And when she finally does look up at him, her mood swings to rage and she lunges at him, screaming that he lied, forcing the orderly to pull her off him and hustle Peter out. And this is the first time Peter seems to realize, oh, shit, I am in over my head.
There are actual hornets in the hornet's nest that I kicked. Whoops.
And that's all we have to say about that.
Yeah.
Again, very, very samey. Very little progress. So on to the C plot. Brooke's a little too involved in Allison and Amanda's business. So Billy's over at Jane's having pre-work coffee, you know how I feel about it, with Allison, and comments that she's not wearing her three blind mice glasses anymore. He doesn't call them that. That's me. She says she was wearing them for everyone else's comfort and decided not to anymore, and she explains how she's hacked the kitchen to allow her to make her own coffee in the morning and brags about how self-sufficient she is, and he agrees, but also tells her she's buttoned her blouse wrong and then steps forward to fix it. While he's doing that, he asks about a D&D party that night and whether she's going to go. She's worried about bumping into walls in front of clients, but Billy says no one's going to let that happen. So she swerves and says she's not ready for something that public. Apparently, it's a party for one of her clients and insists that she's going to come with him and Brooke, the latter of whom has just sidled in the open front door and says, clip 5.
Oh, so now you're dressing her. What's next, sponge baths?
I was just coming down to check on her and I didn't want to wake you.
Brooke, can I make you a cup of coffee? No, thanks. We have our own. In fact, maybe you'd like to sample some with me. Your wife.
You know that she can't get around very well on her own.
Well, maybe she should get a seeing eye dog.
Allison. Ready to head in?
Yeah, I am.
We'll see both of you at the office.
Must be hard for her. She got the ring, but you seem to have gotten the in sickness and in health part.
It's true. Also notable in this scene, you can see it in the visual aids, Amanda's hair is so big and curly, it's very out of character.
Yeah. I mean, we're now in the full, like, everyone's had their hair slightly, like, tweaked so that it's more Rachel-y.
Mm-hmm.
That's when we were, so.
True.
Yeah.
Anyway, Allison ends the scene with a big smirk because I don't think she buttoned her blouse wrong by accident at all. I think she knew exactly what she was doing.
What?
I've seen a TV show before.
Yeah.
The next day, Allison is feeling around the apartment kitchen when she hears the front door open and close, but whoever it is doesn't announce themselves. So she calls out to see if it's Billy, but it's Brooke who says so. She thought she would take advantage of Billy showering to have a chat with Allison because she's sick of Allison's neediness encroaching on their honeymoon phase and has no intention of letting Allison sink her pity hooks further into Billy's back. It's not great writing, but, you know, I get what she means.
Yeah.
Starting with, Allison can find her own way to the party because she's not going with them, and then makes a bad won't-be-seeing-you pun, smashes some of Jane's dishes on the floor, and saunters out. Like,
A lot of it was Tupperware also. That's like, true. Good one.
Yeah. I mean, not that Jane doesn't deserve it, but, you know, not for anything she's done to Brooke. She offered Brooke a discount.
Have they ever even met? Come on. Right.
So that night, Brooke's already rolling her eyes, walking into the party with Billy, who immediately spots Allison already seated. They've been looking all over for her. He wants to know how she got there. Like, what do you think she's going to say? She drove. Come on. How do you think?
I mailed myself.
Yeah.
Fucking Billy.
Also, Amanda's also at this thing. Like, she could have driven Allison, but that's not what happened. Allison took a cab and tipped the driver to walk her in and pointedly tells Brooke she's trying to be more self-sufficient. Billy thinks Allison should have called, but Brooke, wrapping both her arms around one of his, classic Brooke move, tells Billy he should be congratulating Allison. And Amanda appears just then to agree. Allison also deserves kudos for organizing the event. And Allison humbly says she's grateful to hear the band. And Billy tells Brooke he's going to ask Allison to dance so she'll feel less excluded. And Brooke is like, how sweet. Totally undisguised bitch face. Like, no, at his back, not his face. He's going to notice that, maybe.
Yeah, hard to tell.
It's Billy.
Yeah.
Allison tries to decline, but Amanda insists, and Allison gets up just in time for the band to start playing a slow one while Brooke sits and seethes. And they blah about how much stronger her other senses are now that she's lost her vision. And then she blinks real hard, and we see from her POV as the room quickly comes into focus. And Billy can feel that something has changed, asking if she's getting dizzy, but she covers that she's fine and locks her gaze on Brooks and holds Billy closer because secrets. So back at Jane's the next morning, Allison's justifying to Jane why she didn't announce her recovery the previous night. But since Jane is still in full unapologetic toxic girl boss mode, she doesn't think Allison had any obligation to.
Why tell anyone anything? I mean, you know, once Brooke finds out, she won't let Billy within 10 feet of you.
Oh, I can't lie like this. I mean, it was one thing when I was actually blind, but I can't fake it. I can't. I'm telling Billy tonight. I have to.
What?
I mean, like, in theory, I sort of agree with Jane, but in practice, A, it's Jane. Like, this whole, like, you know, Amanda 2.0, no.
Yeah.
And B, it's Billy?
Yeah. Still Billy. Like,
yeah, like, now that you have your sight back, maybe you can make some different choices.
Right.
About old Flytrap McGraw, but all right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So at the office, Amanda calls Brooke in to do some filing, and Brooke in her awful washed-out lemon suit. Ooh, one of the worst things they've ever put her in. It's also short-sleeved. Terrible.
No.
Brooke acts like it's beneath her, and Amanda asks how Brooke is enjoying her new position, and Brooke chirps that she enjoys doing menial tasks. She starts to open a drawer, but Amanda stops her, saying it's off-limits. Secrets. Anyway, Brooke keeps going, and Amanda gives her some unsolicited advice. If Brooke wants to get anywhere, she needs to adjust her attitude. Clip six.
The key to success, Brooke, is knowing that you can gain knowledge from any position within a company, from file clerk to president. And you do that simply by taking everything you can from a job and making the most of it.
You're right, Amanda.
You are absolutely right.
Smartest thing you've said all week.
It's true.
Yeah. But I love that they're both just being full bitches about it. Why not?
Yeah.
The next night, Allison enters the courtyard and sees lights on at Billy's. Inside, he's giving Amanda a beer. She notes that she saw Brooke leaving earlier, apparently to the store, according to Billy. And she pries about whether everything's okay, since she noticed tension at the office. And we watch Allison creep up to the window outside as Billy says it's been difficult navigating marriage and his desire to help Allison through her medical issue. Clip 7.
What are you going to do about it?
About Brooke and me? I'm not sure. I know that I'm not going to abandon Allison, not as long as she's blind anyway.
And that's all Allison needs to hear. So, then we find out. Brooke's not at the store. She went back to the office to rifle through in a totally different weird suit, by the way, which you can also see in the visual aids. It's got, like, so many pirate buttons. It's very strange.
God. Brutal.
She's gone back to rifle through Amanda's forbidden drawer of mystery after finding the key, which she is taped to the underside of a shelf. And the first thing she pulls out is an envelope addressed to, we can barely make it out, but it says Amanda Parisi.
It actually says Amanda Parisi. Different spelling.
Ah, didn't notice that. Mm-hmm. And then clipped to the sheaf of papers inside is a Florida driver's license in that name with a Miami address on Gulf View Avenue.
Like could you narrow it down? It's like how every town in Georgia has at least two Peachtree Boulevards.
Yes,
like, guys,
yes.
Gulf View. Love it.
So then the door opens and Allison totally sees Brooke being shady. But when Brooke sees her there, Allison snaps back into blind mode, like moving her gaze slightly askance and asking if anyone's there. And as Allison feels her way back out, Brooke stands still and smug and says, clip 8.
Nobody, you blind bitch.
Ooh. What? Are you having trouble with this particular way of heel turn for Brooke? Like, I just feel like it's too much, maybe?
It definitely happened fast, but, like, you know, she did plot in the last season to get Allison, you know, sent to Hong Kong.
Yeah.
So
it's just, like, the execution of it at this point seems so much meaner. Like, I don't mind the behavior qua the behavior because it's directed at Eeyore and whatever. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, it just seems a little, like, I keep expecting her to twirl a mustache. And,
yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I think she thought Allison would be out of the picture by now. I mean, obviously through her own machinations, but just generally that Allison would have backed off, and she's not. So I think that's why she's escalating, perhaps. But yeah,
right. But like being a bitch to Amanda in the way she is, though, is like she's just being bratty in a way that she wasn't before. And it's like if this is the writer softening us up for an occurrence, fine, but.
Right.
Yeah, it's just like not quite, because I don't remember exactly how this unfolds from here. It's just like not quite reading.
I mean, the other thing about Brooke, though, is that she thought she'd be out of this job by now. Like she thought she was going to be coming into her amazing trust fund.
That is true.
Which is
why. That is a good point.
Why she like started being bitchy to Amanda in the first place. And Amanda was like, if you want to work here, you're going to have to eat shit. And Brooke's like, oh, no. So,
that's right.
You know.
Good point.
I get it a little, but it is still a bit fast, even given all of those extenuating circumstances.
She still looks great, though. I mean, even these suits, like, they're trying.
Yeah. Her hair is so pretty. Anyway, on to the B-plot. Joe gets a new job with Jane and an old man. Not literally. Jane and Richard are either starting or finishing fucking at his place when he stops and looks dyspeptic. And to her question, he says he's been getting periodic waves of guilt about Mackenzie's death. And Jane hopes that doesn't mean he regrets getting together with her, Jane. And he assures her that he couldn't have gotten through the last few weeks without her. Since when? All they've been doing is fighting. But he jokingly admits that he had some doubts about dating another designer, but things are different with Jane. The sense of partnership is the same as with Mackenzie, though, which is what made him propose to her. And Jane says they're not ready for that and they need to focus on the company. Bitch, he didn't ask. Like, he That wasn't actually a proposal. So then Jake groggily opens the door to Joe with coffee, unsure how he got home the previous night. She put him to bed after a long talk, for which he apologizes, but she says they could stand to talk more. He's her friend, she cares about him, and he cares about her too, and kisses her. And she kisses back, but then stops, says they shouldn't do this. Every time there's a crisis, they fall back together, which she doesn't think is healthy. They should just be friends, although under questioning, she doesn't sound so sure, but he accepts. And the next day, we rejoin Joe and Jane, just as the latter is hiring the former to be Mackenzie Hart's staff photographer. Joe is surprised to learn there's no one else who needs to sign off on it. Clip 9.
Really? Because I didn't hear anything about you taking over for Mackenzie.
Well, for the moment, we're keeping her status quiet.
Status? To make it sound like she's dead.
She is.
Jane, my God, is that ethical?
No, it's good business.
Jane.
It's simply a way to protect the company's interests. And it's only temporary. I mean, believe me, when it's appropriate, we'll go public with the news.
Oh, I see. So now, whether or not I agree with you, I have to keep my mouth shut, too.
Joe, this is a fantastic opportunity for you. I mean, do yourself a favor, take it. And leave the ethics to me.
Why would you leave anything to Jane? Like, this is the problem. Like, it's not just the heel turn. It's that the heel turn asks us to believe that she is competent at business. And,
right.
Like, even for this show, Jane being like, you know, Mackenzie no longer has need of the human encumbrance known as L. Ron Hubbard. Like,
yeah.
What even... And then, sometimes she uses mousse in her hair, and it's like, oh, well, she's bad now. She's using products. This whole thing is like, I still don't care.
Yeah.
That Bring is back the problem. Chris and have him make out with Patrick Muldoon.
Yeah.
Much more interesting show, in my opinion.
I agree. also, like, leave the ethics to me after you just finished saying, it's not ethical, it's good business.
And basically blackmailed her into keeping her mouth shut instead right. of just making her sign an NDA. Like, if you were really a business woman, you would have.
Yep.
Yeah.
You're right.
Shut but up, also, Jane, is my point.
Yeah. I also don't know how they would have been able to keep Mackenzie's death from, like, the other people who were in the bombing. Like, technically, she didn't die from the bomb. She had a heart attack. Like, everyone was there. Everyone was at the hospital at the same time. Like, at no point was someone like, hey, what happened to Richard's wife, who was also there? Like, it's just strange.
Also, if this is a famous designer, where mm-hmm. are the LA stringers that sit on the coroner's office
mm-hmm.
as their job?
Yeah.
Waiting for famous people to come and go.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that's what the whole Mackenzie Harbert gambit was about, but I don't know if you would be able to get her in, like, if you didn't have ID in that name, you know?
Yeah.
Anyway, Joe decides to roll with it, thanking Jane for the job, but is Jane sure about all this? And Jane's never been more sure of anything in her life. So then at Chianti Cucina, according to the B-roll,
maybe.
Exactly, the next night, Jake and Joe celebrate her new job with Jane and Richard, who congratulates Joe and then gets his knives out, confirming that Joe's never worked directly for a fashion house before, and then passive-aggressively noting that Jane fired his photographer so that she could hire Joe. And while Joe tries to smile through this veiled accusation, Jane says they needed new blood, and things don't progress well from there. Clip 11.
Seems your girlfriend's very lucky.
Yes, she is.
I'd rather think it wasn't just luck.
Oh, come on, you gotta admit, this job did just sort of pop up out of nowhere.
Jake?
I'm sure he just means that the opportunity presented itself to you. Even though we already had a very talented person working for us in that capacity.
Now is not the time to get into it, Richard.
Would it be something?
Why don't you let Jane do it? Obviously, she's the one in charge here.
Guy, just fire her. Like, does she even have a contract? If you hate everything she's doing, fucking get rid of her.
Yeah. Like, apparently you hate her also. I have to say, Patrick Muldoon's acting is not acting.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But I think it's good for this role because it's really, like, he's very opaque.
Yeah.
putting it generously. Like, this is an ambiguous performance. Like, not really. It's unambiguously a monotone, and he sounds sinusy, but yes, you can casting forward to what may or may not be happening in the future.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But I mean, all of you, don't talk about this. Like, it's a celebration dinner, so have it be that or leave. Yeah. They're all terrible.
True. So then outside the restaurant, the sign says Devereaux. Coordinate the B-roll and the shooting locations, guys, please.
Yeah.
Is it that hard?
It really isn't. Just have them at the whatever elite modeling agency that you've used 100 times. Like, well, now it's a diner. What?
Yeah. Anyway, Joe lays into Jake for implying to her new employer that she didn't get the job on merit. He snaps back that he doesn't know anything about fashion photography. And if she has this many problems with Jake, then maybe she just shouldn't be his friend. She doesn't know where this is coming from. So he tells her, clip 12.
Look, I'm under a lot of pressure, all right? I mean, and here you are with some flashy new job. I'm barely keeping above water with no help in sight. Sydney quit. She was doing a lot, including the books.
So this is about shooters?
Yeah. No, it's not about shooting. I don't know.
You're really confusing me, Jake.
Fine. You want to know the truth, then? You know what the truth is? I just was hoping that I wouldn't lose you to your new career so soon again.
You know what I think? I think that we're both the kind of people that need to know where we stand. And maybe the mistake that we made in the past was not giving what we had any kind of structure.
Any what, a commitment?
The jury's been in for a long time, Jake. And you and I just haven't been willing to admit it. How about now?
I'm willing if you are.
It's a big plunge.
I think I can handle it.
Good, because you're going to get a bonus prize. I'll do your books until you get someone full-time.
Or you do that for me.
Well, I'm your girlfriend, right?
I have 5,000 questions about that scene.
I mean, so do I, but my first question is, does no one remember the last time she helped with his business? Because that turned out badly.
Yep. That's one. Number two, this is the first indication we've had that Shooters is in any kind of trouble.
Mm-hmm.
Like, other than when he was getting shaken down by that guy.
Yeah. Third, there's a couple waiters in Los Angeles, I heard.
Yeah.
Why is Sydney doing your book? What?
Why is Sydney? Who would trust Sydney to do their books? Like, has Sydney ever taken an accounting class? Can Sydney do math? Like, I love Sydney, but I'm not so sure.
Yeah.
Very weird. And also, like, the whole thing about, like, where he says, I didn't think your career would get in the way so fast. Like, I remember one episode with what's-her-face, Vanessa Angel, with a model who was, like, around Joe and being wild, and they kissed or something, and, like, she took her dress off by the pool. But that was, like, one episode, and it was like, I'm not going to hang out with her anymore. And that was it. Like, that wasn't the reason they broke up.
No. Also, like, she's a staff photographer. It'll be less intrusive, probably.
Right. Yes.
More predictable hours, anyway, you'd assume.
Right. She probably won't have to travel because they're just going to be shooting, like, somewhere in the building at the strip mall.
Yeah.
So, whatever. Yeah. They're boyfriend, girlfriend again. Good, because I do like them together, despite all of this bullshit.
Mm.
Later, Jane finds Richard at the office. She thought they were going to spend the night together, but instead they're going to have a fight. Clip 13.
Richard, listen.
I've been thinking, Jane. And I've decided to cancel the spring line show.
Richard, you can't be serious. If that show is our cornerstone, it would be financial suicide for the company.
Of course, for the company. You know, Jane, sometimes I think this company means more to you than I do.
Don't pretend this is about my ambition. You're punishing me for hiring Joe without your approval.
Oh, not at all. It's just that some of the staffers have been asking questions, mostly due to your aggressive behavior. This is getting too hot, too complicated.
Richard, I'm sorry if I overstepped your authority. That wasn't my intention. I'm just trying to do everything I know to ensure this company's success, your success.
The question is, why?
because you mean something to me. More than you know. And I want to show you how much.
That was, of course, her taking off her coat and being naked underneath. And
only on TV.
You can see in the visual aids that Patrick Muldoon, like, just fully tractor beam eyeline right to her boobs, which I'm sure had, like, those, you know, stickers or whatever they do. But it's
that's just good direction, though.
True. Like,
this is what would actually happen.
True. It's very funny, though. Yeah, again, Richard, fire this person. You do not trust her. You think she's shady. You're right. Don't cancel the spring show. That's dumb. But everything else you said was not untrue. So
yeah. Or cancel it and don't explain yourself to her.
Yeah. Yes. Let her try and go back and work for Kay again. See how that goes. The next night, Jake is pouring wine for himself and Joe, whom he assumes is at the door when he hears a knock. But it's some blonde. We don't know. But she knows him. She's Shelley Hansen, Jess's ex-wife. And is Jess there? She wants to know. So it falls to her, as it were. It falls to Jake, rather, to tell her the bad news. And instead of speaking, she just steps forward and basically makes Jake hug her. And that's where we leave it with these two.
Yeah. Nice of her to show up and make Patrick Muldoon look like Laurence Olivier, though, because that's what's going to happen. Spoiler!
That is very true.
She's so bad!
She's real bad.
Awful.
Finally, our A-plot. Originally, I had Matt's legal problems get a lot more complicated, but it's more like Matt's legal problems take a left turn, kind of. And we'll explain how. In the can at the hospital, Paul is freshening up when suddenly Matt's there, handing him a paper towel. Paul testily asks Matt to let him pass and threatens to call the cops. But Matt announces he got a letter from Carol. And Paul remains in character. Clip 14.
And why the hell would Carol write you to warn me? She thought that we were both being used by you, that you were plotting something. She said she feared for her life. Look, Paul, I didn't tell anybody about the letter. Not even my attorney.
Is that right? And you're telling me this because
you still don't get it, do you? I love you. I never stopped loving you. Not even after I had it figured out. Look, Paul, I know you killed Carol. I know that you set me up. But I also know that we belong together. That things between us can still work out if you will let them. Look, I can probably get off in a couple of years jail time. I'm willing to do that if I know you'll wait for me.
My God. You're pathetic.
True.
Paul. What should I do about the letter?
Whatever you want, Matt. Because I didn't kill anyone. You did. Besides, who believes someone like you?
Oh, Matt. So the end of this, of course, is him pulling out a tape recorder because he was taping the whole thing, trying to get Paul to incriminate himself. But it's like, ham-fisted. And like, why include I still love you? Come on, man.
I know. Come on, buddy.
Listen to your lawyer. Speaking of whom, next time we see him, he's playing the tape for Alicia and her purplest of purple suits. It's so Lakers purple.
Oh,
I can't take
God.
It.
God.
He's seeing the visual aids. He thinks he's almost gotten Paul to confess and has a whole plan. Clip 15.
You know, look, I think if I approach him again, that I can get a full confession on tape.
Not only is it inadmissible, it's more incriminating to you than it is to him.
Yes.
What the hell are you
doing? I'm doing you a favor, Matt.
It's her destroying the tape.
Look, you and I both know that they've already got enough circumstantial evidence to fry me. And whether you believe it or not, I had something on that tape. I had a start.
Matt, you're kidding yourself. Not to mention putting yourself at risk, so please, leave the investigating to me.
Wrong. I don't have to do anything, and I especially don't have to sit back and put my fate in the hands of someone who's already got 50 other cases on her docket.
All right.
I understand you're frustrated. But letting your temper get the better of you won't help matters.
My life is at stake. And you're telling me not to lose my cool. I got news for you, Alicia. I already lost it! And I'm gonna keep losing it because obviously that's the only way anything gets done! And if that means that I have to keep confronting Paul until I get a confession out of him on tape, then that is what I am going to do. And no self-promoting, overpriced attorney is going to tell me otherwise.
Okay. I'll contact the public defender's office in the morning and advise them of your need for new counsel.
What?
I can't properly defend someone who is deliberately damaging their case. Good luck, Matt. Be careful.
Why is it only the guest star characters who have boundaries and enforce them? Because she's really so right. I mean, you also don't get to complain about your overpriced attorney when someone else is paying her, Matt.
And how many cases she has when your other option is the public defender.
Right.
It's like, I just love that he like loses it and she's like, fine, find someone else. And he's like, what?
I know.
You idiot.
Like, call his bluff. He brought himself here. Like, A-plus performance from her. But yeah, I love Doug Savant, but anger is not... It's Mm-mm. not his forte. This is not what we believe Matt doing. Like,
no.
Even under the circumstances.
His hair looks better, though.
It definitely looks more contrite, yes.
Mm-hmm. The raging, like, knocks it out of its gel poof, and it's a big improvement, in my opinion.
It's true. So after a commercial back at her place, Joe's like, dude, what did you do? Which, like, given her choice of lawyer, I'm not sure I'd let her drag me like this. But she's also not wrong as she tells him to eat shit to get Alicia to take him back as a client. And then Amanda is just there. Clip 16.
Good morning. Don't be shy, Amanda. Come on in.
That line reading from Zuniga. Flawless. Chef's kiss.
I like the reminder that these two have history. Like, Joe still hates her, and Amanda nothing's Joe. It's just great. Anyway, Amanda has appeared to tell them she bullied her contractors, I'm paraphrasing, until they committed to having Matt's place ready for him to return to in 2 weeks. And Matt just hopes he'll still be in a position to need an apartment by then. And then Amanda keeps talking. Clip 17.
I heard about your problems, and I'm really sorry.
Oh, thanks. I appreciate your concern.
Well, and I want you to know that while some people may not feel comfortable with your presence here, you have my full support. I mean, the way I see it, even if you did murder that woman, it was clearly a crime of passion. I mean, it's not as though you're a serial killer. Anyway, I'm off. See you too.
I think she really is trying to be nice. It's supportive.
I do. Absolutely.
And then cut to the two of them just being like, what?
Yes.
So crazy.
You can see in the visual aids as well because it's so funny. But yeah, also the idea that people have come to Amanda to be like, I don't feel great about Matt living here. Like, no one is scared of Matt.
No
one's scared of Matt, including
also,
Paul.
Like, you know, not the first or even the second person to be guilty of killing someone.
Right. In this apartment, currently.
Yeah.
Anyway, as soon as Amanda's gone, Paul phones and asks Matt back to his place that night to talk, and a saucer-eyed Matt agrees. And before hanging up, Paul orders Matt to bring the letter. So when Joe gets home from work that night, she sees Matt's left her a note advising her about this trip and ordering her not to call the cops. And Joe instead guesses she should call his attorney, which ex-attorney, but yes. Mm-hmm. Cut to Paul letting Matt in at his place. Matt's so glad Paul called since it means Paul's been thinking about things. But then Paul pulls a gun out of his pocket and points it at Matt. And do you want to talk about Paul's gunsmanship?
Oh my God. He just holds it sideways like, well, someone's been watching too many Tarantino movies.
Yep.
Okay, Romeo is about to die. Take it easy.
Yeah.
It's so crazy. I will also note that Matt is a moron. I know everybody already knows this, but like, why would he not at least bring a dummy letter to stall with?
Yes.
Like, this guy already outsmarted you like 17 ways to Sunday. Mm-hmm. Why wouldn't you buy yourself at least 5 minutes? Like, here's the letter, and then I'll just, like, jump out the window and leave the tape recorder. Like, I don't know.
Yeah, type something. But anyway, yes, that's what happens.
Yeah, us help you, Matt.
Paul wants the letter. Matt's like, psych, there wasn't one. And he tries to talk his way out of it. Paul's not interested. Matt says he did it to try to get Paul to confess. And Paul looks a tiny bit impressed, which, like, you hadn't already figured this out. But then Paul steps forward, touches Matt's right tit, and rips a shirt open to reveal the tape recorder taped to his chest. And Paul mocks this amateur hour move, because saying it's not hooked up to anything. And Matt claims he's wired to the cops, who will be there any minute. And Paul rightly doubts this and speaks directly into the mic. Clip 18.
Hi, this is Paul Graham with a message to the police. I killed my wife, Carol. Is that what you wanted, Matt? Too bad nobody's ever gonna hear it.
Police! Freeze!
Thank God. He was trying to kill me, but I got the gun away from him.
I have a taped confession. He killed his wife. It's on this.
So that was Paul shooting and then getting shot by cops, and as he's lying on the floor bleeding out, a cop tells Paul his injuries are very serious. And are Matt's accusations true? And Paul just gasps, and then Alicia enters, and as all three of them lean over Paul, Matt nags. Clip 19.
Come on, Paul, tell him. Come on, tell him, Paul. Tell him, damn it. I don't want to go to prison for the rest of my life for something that you did.
That's a wrap on Paul. Paul dies. Matt cries. The end of Paul. You know, I do think it was worth it, this little escapade, for the sake of that cliffhanger in the finale, because that was pretty good.
Yeah, it was.
But I'm not mad that we're wrapping it up this quickly.
No, I'm not either. Paul sucks, and I'm glad he's dead. And the whole the whole scheming, murderous, bisexual thing is tired, but it was the 90s, and I guess people pretended not to know that back then.
Right.
So, I'm all set. Good performance, but I'm done.
Yep, agree. So the next day, Matt is right back at work, because none of these fucking idiots have ever heard of personal days, except for Allison, the only one that ever tries to take them, and Amanda always says no. At least Matt's coworkers are throwing him a good job getting the guy who framed you to confess before he died party, although the banners just say, welcome back, Matt. Then Calvin Hobbs enters and declines Matt's offer of refreshment. He has heard that the charges were dropped. Matt is ready to return to his job. Hobbs just looks pissy and doesn't respond. And off this energy, Matt apologizes for the impromptu celebration but plans to stay late to make up for lost time. But turns out that's not going to be necessary. Clip 20.
Those charges may have been dropped, but that doesn't erase the fact that, contrary to policy, you were involved with a staff physician. And as a result of that involvement, two people are dead. Now, maybe you see yourself as having been vindicated, but in the process, this hospital's reputation was dragged for the mud. It's not something I'm willing to risk again.
Dr. Hobbs? I don't understand what he's saying.
Better consider this your send-off party, Fielding. You're fired.
Kimberly blew up an apartment building. Also,
Michael is currently out on bail.
He didn't do this
crime, but he's done a bunch of other ones. Peter's still working there, and he fucking tried to kill Amanda.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Paul was allowed to continue working there, even though it was obvious to anyone else who'd watched TV before that he set Matt up. So is the problem Matt, Hobbsy? Ask yourself.
Right. I mean, if the issue is you know, Matt was involved in with someone and people ended up dead. Like, so was Paul. Paul was also fucking Matt, and there was no repercussions for him other than his wife dying.
Yep.
Anyway, there's clearly more to this, but we are not going to get into it this week. Instead, let us close up by naming our episode MVP. Alicia Barnett, attorney at law with the purplest suit in the land.
I am going to go with Mr. Coffee because there's really a lot of coffee business happening in this episode.
Very true.
So, caffeine.
Uh-huh. Least valuable player. Boy.
The script coordinator, because this Amanda Parisi shit is not going to make sense. You're going to try to make it make sense. It's not really going to work.
Yeah. I'm going to say Dr. Calvin Hobbs, who, in addition to having a very stupid name, is also a homophobe, clearly.
Mm-hmm. And is going to get sued up the wazoo, as he should be.
Agreed.
Next time on Again With This, Joe's sketched out by Shelley, Richard's put off by Jane's ambition some more, Kimberly's gone even further off the deep end, and Brooke gets off on blackmailing Amanda. You'll be wanting to peel off your cornea after you peep our visual aids. You'll find those for this and every episode of Again With This at againwiththispodcast.com. That's also where you can find links to our very special 90210 book, which you may have heard about on a certain podcast. You can follow us on Twitter at AWT90210 and join our Patreon page at patreon.com/againwiththis. Any level of support gets you extra content. I'm blind bitch Sarah D. Bunting, and I'm on Twitter at Tomato Nation. My co-host is Useful Dying Declaration Tara Ariano. She's on Twitter at Tara Ariano. And our producer is Perfectly Innocent Miss Buttoning David T. Cole. Talk to you next time.
Things are sure getting weird around here.